In 2018, a mysterious document leaked to the public from the estate of the late Apollo 14 astronaut and sixth man to walk on the moon, Edgar Mitchell. The 15-page meeting notes recall a 2002 alleged meeting between physicist Eric Davis and U.S. Navy Vice Admiral Thomas Wilson in a car outside defense contractor EG&G. In this record of Eric Davis's notes, the two discuss hidden black budget programs within the United States government focused on the exploitation and study of UFOs, and how Admiral Wilson's attempts to read into the program were stonewalled and met with threats. What's going on, everybody? This is Gerb. Join me as we take a deeper dive into this controversial document that, if authentic, is the smoking gun corroborating years of conspiracy that the United States government is actively attempting to reverse engineer craft of non-human origins.
My role in the release of the documents, in short, through a highly unlikely series of events, I was responsible for the Wilson Davis documents finding their way into the public arena. How did this happen?
Meet James Rigney, the man behind the Wilson Davis memo leak. Around 2013, Rigney formed a close relationship with a confidential source while attending a space conference within the U.S. The source had maintained close relationships with numerous Apollo astronauts, including the sixth man to walk on the moon, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. When Mitchell passed away unexpectedly in February of 2016, Rigney's source was invited by his immediate family to aid in the dispersing of Mitchell's estate. Much of the estate's contents comprised of belongings and documents marked for destruction. Rigney was then contacted by his friend to discuss some of the documents found referencing UFOs. Now, this may come as a surprise to some, but many astronauts and cosmonauts, including Gordon Cooper of Mercury and Gemini, Eugene Cernan of Apollo 17, James Irwin of Apollo 15, cosmonaut Viktor Afanasyev, and Edgar Mitchell, all had an interest or made public comments on UFOs. Upon retirement, Mitchell himself stated, and I quote, "I happen to have been privileged enough to be in on the fact that we've been visited on this planet and the UFO phenomenon is real." Mitchell and Cooper in particular took a massive interest in ufology after their legendary careers as astronauts. Mitchell began talking publicly about his beliefs on UFOs in 1973, just 2 years after landing on the moon. Throughout his time discussing the phenomena, Mitchell would take a keen interest in the topic of UFOs and nuclear weapons, in particular, UFOs disabling nuclear weapons, like the testimony of Lieutenant Robert Jacobs. This is something I'd like to cover in another video, so if you don't know who that is, hold tight. But Mitchell would also discuss the validity of the Roswell crash as a native to the New Mexico region. NASA itself distanced itself, quote, "NASA does not track UFOs. NASA is not involved in any sort of cover-up about alien life on this planet or anywhere in the universe. Dr. Mitchell is a great American, but we do not share his opinion on this issue." While this statement is categorically false, NASA has, in fact, studied UFOs for decades, that is not the topic of this video. The point is, nobody knows how Mitchell came in possession of the Wilson Davis memo, but throughout his time after his career as an astronaut, he was deeply ingrained in the field of ufology. Okay, back to Rigney. After hearing about the documents within the late astronaut's estate, Rigney asked for and was granted access to the materials. Rigney copied numerous documents of interest, including the Wilson Davis memo. Rigney's name was made public when he appeared on Richard Dolan's podcast, where he discussed the origin and contents of the memo. Finally, before we dissect this memo, I'd like to talk about the two men featured within the alleged meeting, Vice Admiral Thomas Wilson and astrophysicist Eric Davis. Eric Davis is an accomplished astrophysicist with ties to the Department of Defense and the Department of Defense's former publicly known UFO investigation group, the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. He has been featured on papers regarding advanced propulsion and has served as chief science officer within the esteemed EarthTech International. In 2018, journalist George Knapp leaked reports of 38 studies commissioned by the above-mentioned ATIP and the DOD, later confirmed by John Greenwald of the Black Vault through a 2019 Freedom of Information Act request. Among the studies feature research proposals titled Traversable Wormholes, Stargates, and Negative Energy, Anti-Gravity for Aerospace Applications, concepts for extracting energy from the quantum vacuum. All of these papers were authored by Eric Davis, showing this guy has been on the cutting edge of some pretty advanced scientific topics. Okay, what about Admiral Thomas Wilson? Vice Admiral Wilson is an accomplished, decorated deputy director of the DIA, director of the DIA from 1999 to 2002, and vice admiral in the U.S. Navy. Wilson was accredited with many awards and accommodations during his Navy career, including the Distinguished Defense Medal and the Distinguished Service Medal. Okay, finally, let's address what this meeting entails. I'd like to go through it line by line. It can be a little confusing, but let's go through everything. Okay, so the date is October 16th, 2002. Eric Davis, currently contracted with the DOD, hops in the car of Vice Admiral Wilson. At this time in 02, Wilson had just retired as the deputy director of the DIA. This is crucial to understand, as he would have access and oversight to all special access programs within the DOD, whether acknowledged or unacknowledged. During the same period of time, Davis had also been investigating an embedded UFO crash retrieval program within the United States government, and thus wanted to meet with Wilson. The meeting begins with the two exchanging pleasantries, only for Wilson to bring up Oak Shannon, a name that will be brought up throughout this memo. Shannon would later go on to confirm the authenticity of this memo in a J. Anderson Project Unity interview, and his name is important because Shannon is a former manager of special projects at Los Alamos National Laboratories and former Department of Energy nuclear physicist. Anyways, Wilson goes on to explain that Oak requested Wilson speak to Davis about what he told Commander Will Miller regarding crashed/retrieved UFO crafts. Now quickly, this mention of Will Miller is key. Prior to this meeting, former United States Navy Commander Will Miller wrote to Eric Davis and physicist Hal Puthoff, offering his contractual service into research of UFO crash retrieval programs within and outside the United States government. Miller writes about knowing specifics on a special team and two key officers focused on crash retrievals. Personally, I like to guess the projects mentioned may be codename Moondust, Bluefly, or Zodiac, but let's save that for another video on deep diving into unacknowledged special access programs. He also makes claims about a name and location of a senior officer with firsthand knowledge of United States government ARVs, or also known as alien reproduction vehicles. If that wasn't wild enough, Miller also claims to have a list of civilian USG contractors who have knowledge of USG work in, quote, alien-derived technologies, crashes, landings, and associated events. This is all information we'd come to know as somewhat fact during the 2020s with whistleblower David Grush and the 2024 UAP National Defense Authorization Act, but for now let's focus back on the memo. Wilson then discusses how Stephen Greer spoke to him, Miller, and Edgar Mitchell in 1997 in a Pentagon conference room about UFOs, Roswell, and crashed UFOs. So, think what you want about Greer and his nonsense with CT5 or whatever it's called. That is essentially his way of contacting UFOs in outer space. It's total bullshit, and the guy went off the deep end completely. But around this time in the late 1990s and early 2000s, Greer was doing incredible work, such as bringing forward the whistleblower Marine Lance Corporal Jonathan Weygandt and his sighting of a crashed UFO in Peru in 97. Following the conference, Miller and Wilson spoke privately, leaving Wilson intrigued to dig for more. The Admiral then goes on to talk about how he wouldn't talk to press, media, etc., and wanted to stay private on this topic. He tells Davis if he ever blows the Admiral's trust, he'd deny meeting, deny everything said in the meeting, and would never seek to know more or talk more on this topic without clearance. Wilson states, quote, too risky because of security violation just by mentioning it. Very tightly held info. Absurdly close held subject matter. Never seen anything like this program in the black programs community. The two then focus back on Wilson's subsequent 45-day investigation in April to June of 97. During investigation into these programs, Wilson was advised by General Marshall Ward and Secretary of Defense Bill Perry to go through records group files in OUTSTAT, the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology. Both men told him of a, quote, special project records group not belonging to usual special access programs, a special subset of the unacknowledged carve-outs, waived programs not belonging to usual SAP divisions as organized in 94 by Perry himself, end quote. So if you don't know exactly what a special access program or SAP is, SAPs are programs with highly classified information with safeguards and access restrictions, black projects that are often undisclosed and have undisclosed funding and need to know program access. There are two types of SAPs, acknowledged and unacknowledged. Wilson then claims to have found the, quote, unusual records group, end quote, where the program was housed in the, quote, index abstracts. He called seven program managers, four of which referred him to the same program run by three people, a security director, former NSA, a program director, and a corporate attorney who referred to themselves as the Watch Committee. Now remember that, remember the Watch Committee, because I'm going to talk about it quite a bit throughout this. Now it's crucial to note the four programs that referred Wilson to the threesome were, quote, part of it, in different compartments, placed in different layers of the compartment's pyramid, split up to do different things of parts of it, end quote. They belong in the same records group, but with non-correlative connections. Whether this means these programs were adjacent to the crash retrieval program Wilson found, such as reverse engineering or material exploitation, I'm not quite sure. This section of the memo is quite curious. Essentially, what Wilson is saying is these four compartments are somehow embedded within each other, and the crash retrieval program looked over by the Watch Committee is somehow embedded with these. This is something that David Grush would go on and talk about a lot more in 2023 with black budget programs being nestled within each other, funded through IRADs and the such. But again, not the topic of the video. No budget info was listed for the program, purposefully kept secret for audit avoidance. Wilson would not divulge the SAP compartment, labeling it as a, quote, core secret, but does mention an aerospace technology contractor as the project coordinator. The contractor is active in defense and intelligence and is, quote, the best one of them, end quote. In my opinion, and with the revelations of Grush and Senator Harry Reid and so forth, this contractor is likely Lockheed Martin. Wilson also confirmed the contractor was correct from Mike and Perry, as mentioned above. At the end of May 97, Wilson made three calls to the program manager. One call was a conference call with the security director and corporate attorney. The admiral told them he had read into their program record in the OUSTAT SAP records group and wanted to know about their crashed UFO retrieval program, their role within the program, and what they had, and even if they had heard of the Majestic 12 or any such organizational code relating to the program. They met Wilson with confusion and agitation, asking him who he talked to before he called them. Wilson demanded a formal briefing and tore, exploiting his regulatory authority as the deputy director of the DIA / Assistant Joint Chief of Staff J2, to which the overseers agreed to meet in person. Wilson flew out to meet the Watch Committee, met in their conference room in a secure vault, and all three showed up. Wilson inquired into the name Watch Committee and was told that they were formed out of necessity to protect themselves after a near disaster almost blew their cover. Vague about the reasoning, Wilson pieced together a past audit investigation which led to them, and the program was nearly outed. A tug of war for program transparency ensued with the Pentagon chief, money and hiding being the issue. A threat was levied to blow the lid off the program. The investigator of the audit was briefed and given a tour of the program. Wilson then goes on to discuss that after the incident, a formal agreement was struck with SAPOC to prevent the uncovering of the program. Special criteria were established to ensure rigorous access was met by the Watch Committee, No United States government personnel could access the program unless they met the strict criteria. The committee refused to tell Wilson exactly what the criteria was. The committee let Wilson know the purpose of the meeting was to inform him he would not be read into the program. While his tickets were all confirmed invalid, he was not on the bigot list. Wilson argued, but the committee denied Wilson's argument that he was privy to read into the program due to his statutory oversight and regulatory authority as deputy director of the DIA. Remember, in all other situations, the deputy director of the DIA has access to all acknowledged and unacknowledged SAPs. To prove Wilson otherwise, the committee showed him pages of the bigot list, dated 1990 to 1993, containing program employees, their names and titles. All were civilians as far as Wilson could recognize. Scientists, technicians, engineers, managers, etc. No politicians, no White House names, presidents, congressional people or staffers, nobody from the Clinton or Bush senior administration were on the list. What Wilson did recognize were the names of Pentagon individuals from AUSTAT, National Security Council, and other departments. The committee told him the program was not a weapons, intelligence, spec ops, or logistics program. The program did not fit into any of these categories. The security and attorney then go on to, quote, "It's okay to say it." Okay, what does that mean? The program was a reverse engineering program focused on, quote, "something recovered in the past," end quote, where technological hardware was recovered. Wilson's initial thoughts, of course, was a focus on reverse engineering Soviet or Chinese tech, and these UFOs were a cover, but the committee said they weren't that either. The program manager said they had a craft, an intact craft they believed could fly. Now, he did not specify the medium in which this craft could fly, but the manager strictly expressed the craft did not come from overseas, that it was not possible. They did not know it was from, they had some ideas, but it was technology that was not of this earth, not made by man, not by human hands. The program had been trying to understand and exploit the technology. The program had been going on for years with very slow progress. In fact, the progress was so agonizingly slow with little to no success, partly due to painful lack of collaboration to receive help from the wider outside scientific community and experts. This was due to the need to remain isolated, use their own facility, and utilize cleared personnel, with only 400 to 800 workers total since the program's inception. Wilson then asked about the Roswell crash, Holloman Air Force Base landing, Majestic 12 and subsequent leaked docs, and the Zamora and Bentwater UFO cases, but the committee declined to discuss these topics. Miller threatened to go to SAPOC and complain to gain access to the program, but the committee continued to deny the Admiral's authority, even with logistical and sound reasoning behind it to be read in. Wilson later on then returned to Washington, where he did in fact complain to SAPOC's senior review group at the Pentagon. The senior review group, or SRG, sustained the contractor and their access denial. Wilson was told to immediately drop the matter and let it go. The SRG chairman, John Deutsch, told Wilson if he did not follow their suggestion, quote, he would not see the director of the DIA promotion, he would get an early retirement, and lose 1 to 2 stars, end quote. From June to December 97, after the meeting with the SRG took place, Paul and Mike, as mentioned above, with AUSTAT and USTAT, were replaced by AUSTAT Jacques Gansler and USTAT Brigadier General Ward of the Air Force. Wilson then spoke to Gansler in January of 98 and learned he was in fact read into the program by someone. Gansler told Wilson, and I quote, UFOs are real, so-called alien abductions not real. Gansler would speak no more on this topic. To conclude the meeting, Davis then told Wilson, after hearing all of this, he would keep their meeting private for only personal use. He would keep his mouth shut and talk no more about the meeting. Okay, those are the 15-page notes. That was a lot to cover, a whole lot, and a lot of shocking revelations. So essentially what we've learned in summary is a deputy director to the DIA found out about a secret program that was focused on crash retrieval and reverse engineering of UFOs, but was blocked access by both the program managers and SAPOC itself. This is wild stuff that even somebody as decorated as a vice admiral and director to the DIA is not read into such a program. Now that we've covered this memo line by line, let's start to discuss the authenticity of the Wilson Davis memo. In a now deleted segment of the basement office with Stephen Greenstreet, Eric Davis refuses to comment on if the meeting took place, but does confirm the notes were leaked out of Edgar Mitchell's estate. Check this out.
I want to bring up, before, because we're pressed for time, tell me about the Admiral Wilson transcript.
I can't discuss that.
You can't
discuss it? I'm not at liberty to discuss it.
Because you're all over the...
Oh, I know.
All over it.
Yeah. They were leaked out of Ed Mitchell's estate. There's nothing I can say about it.
I mean, can you speak to the veracity of them?
No, I can't. I can't address that at all. I won't answer any questions on the Admiral Wilson notes.
You don't want to speak to at least whether these are...
You know, they're purportedly classified information. I can't... I'm not at liberty to confirm or verify any aspect of those notes. And, you know, when you have security clearances, that's something you don't want to violate, because the Department of Justice under the Obama administration, and it's continued under the Trump administration policies, is they will vigorously prosecute anybody with security clearances who will go out of their way to discuss any classified information that got leaked or released into the public illegally, so, or through other means.
Interesting that Davis talks about his inability to break security clearances and thus cannot comment on the memo.
All right, so is that a yes? These are real? These are true?
I won't give you an answer.
Okay. All right.
What does Wilson have to say on the memo? The following is a quote from Wilson from an interview with Billy Cox, an investigative reporter for the Sarasota Herald Tribune in 2020. Quote, "It's all fiction. I wouldn't know Eric Davis if he walked in right now." End quote. Second quote, "I'm not saying that sometime somewhere I never met Davis, but I certainly don't know him. I don't remember him, and I definitely did not sit with him in a car for an hour in Las Vegas." But Wilson does admit to meeting with Stephen Greer and Edgar Mitchell in the quote on screen now, but says he did not follow up on the investigation. So yeah, Wilson denies the meeting, but he also says in the meeting notes he would deny the meeting never took place, deny knowing Davis. And knowing what was on the line for him, losing his admiralship and not receiving such prestigious promotions as the director of the DIA, I'm not surprised he would deny this. Let's also bring up some players outside of the memo. First, Christopher Mellon, former Deputy Assistant Secretary for Defense for Intel in the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations. Second, the journalist behind David Grush, Ross Colehart. Third, the author Richard Dolan. And fourth, the former ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, Director Lou Elizondo, have all confirmed the document's authenticity. In a 2002 website post titled "Unprecedented UAP Legislation," Chris Mellon actually talks about Eric Davis and his important contributions to UAP transparency. And he specifically cites the Wilson Davis memo, saying, quote, "Wilson Davis memo provided specific information lending credence to sensational reports that an official U.S. government program is actively seeking to exploit recovered technology that was fashioned by some other species or perhaps advanced AI machines." Now, let's hop over to an interview with Ross Colehart, Bryce Zabel, and Lou Elizondo, the former ATIP director as mentioned above. Lou was quoted as saying this, quote, "That Wilson memo, let me tell you something. That thing isn't going to die. That thing is now out for the public, and that is going to start a firestorm, one in which I can't comment on, but you know, DOD should have saw this coming." Now, check out this interesting clip on CNN's Larry King Live in 2008, where Dr. Edgar Mitchell himself discusses the memo.
Go ahead, Dr. Mitchell, I'm fine. Well, I eventually went to the Pentagon and asked for a meeting with the Intelligence Committee of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which I got with another naval officer who had had many similar experiences. And we told our story. And this gentleman, a vice admiral, said to us, well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to find out. And called a few weeks later and said he had found the source of the black budget funding for this project, and that he was going to subsequently investigate, because if it was real, he should know about it. As a matter of fact, he should be in charge. That was his words. And so we did get calls from him sometime later, and a report much later than that, that he had found the people responsible for the cover-up and for the people who were in the know, and were told, I'm sorry, Admiral, you do not have need to know here, and so goodbye.
All right, Bill.
Please excuse the glares from Bill Nye. It's crazy that a glorified kids show host with the same education as me, a bachelor's in mechanical engineering, is seen as a scientific leader, but that's besides the point. It's worth noting finally that the memo itself was entered into the official U.S. congressional record in 2022. Now finally, let's touch on an interview with UFO researcher Joe Murgia and Will Miller. When asked about Miller's letter to Eric Davis, he skirts the question, saying he has no recollection of the letter, or he's straight up not willing to discuss the letter. Within this same interview, Miller also confirms the 97 meeting with Edgar Mitchell, Thomas Wilson, Stephen Greer, and DIA Hughes, confirming that Wilson took the meeting at Miller's request. Miller also states that DIA Hughes requested the meeting and needed the briefing expedited to him. Throughout the memo, I had been curious about what the bigot list and watch committee really meant. Well, Joe asks Miller, and this is what Miller says. Quote, bigot list from World War II, British invasion of German-occupied territory. Today, it's just a list of SAP, USAP authorization individuals. Lists vary according to the program in question, the types of individuals needed to run the program, and how limited the access needs to be depending on the sensitivity of the program. Later on, Joe brings up one of Wilson's quotes from that Billy Cox article we had just mentioned above. Joe says, quote, are you surprised to see him say that? It seems he's open to the possibility of the existence of a buried USAP crash retrieval program with no congressional oversight. Your thoughts? Miller retorts as so, quote, concur, but am surprised. He said to us that he found it impossible that such a program could not be kept secret for so many years. Strange, since it's routine for such programs to persist unknown to most for years. Last point from this article, we get Miller's entire view on this phenomena. Joe asks him, quote, in your opinion, from what you have learned from sources, do you think we have intact craft, multiple intact craft, or just pieces of UFOs? Will Miller responds, quote, it's my firm belief that yes, we, the Russians, probably the Germans, and perhaps the Chinese have at least partial technologies, and most likely for the U.S., entire operational craft. I believe that we have our own transluminal velocity craft that can take us anywhere in space and time. Did we develop this technology independently? Probably not. So now let's summarize what some crucial figures have said about the document. Miller and Davis refused to acknowledge the memo and participation, using Miller's own favorite retort when asked about, quote, core secrets. No comment. Wilson flat out denies the meeting taking place, but alongside some discrepancies in his quotes and accounts of the meeting with Miller in 97, Wilson himself said in the memo his career was at great jeopardy if he continued to pursue the issue. So to me, it's no surprise he would flat out deny any and all allegations. Former ATIP director Lou Elizondo, former DEPSEC Chris Mellon, prize journalist Ross Coulthart, Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and more have all attested to the document's authenticity. But what do you think? Do you think this is made-up nonsense? Or the real smoking gun of a DIA director's stonewalled attempts to discover the USG's black UFO reverse engineering program hidden within unacknowledged special access programs? Here's what I think. The memo is real. Wilson's alleged account of an embedded crash retrieval program mirrors an almost identical account of the whistleblower and true American hero, David Grush. Former ATIP director Lou Elizondo has both confirmed the memo's authenticity and once spoke about ATIP discovering a black program within the DOD, deeply focused on UFOs, but was denied access. Davis's no comment, as well as sources close to Davis confirming the authenticity of this memo, is damning. And all this is without mentioning Edgar Mitchell, who he himself confirmed the meeting before his notes were found in his estate after his death. Lastly, I won't explain any more on this topic, and I understand if you don't believe me, but I have spoken to Chris Mellon about the Wilson Davis memo, and I have further confidence in the memo's authenticity. Guys, thank you very much for watching my first video. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any criticism or things you'd like me to add or different ways of pacing, just let me know in the comments and I'm happy to oblige. I have numerous video ideas I'd like to make, including probably half a dozen videos more on U.S. black budget programs focused on reverse engineering and crash retrieval. So I got a lot more in the pipe for those. I'd specifically like to possibly dive into what I think these programs are called and follow their paper trails and kind of see what they've been up to, because I have a little bit of good information on that, I believe. But stay tuned. I'm probably going to make some fun videos as well as these documentaries. These documentary styles are a blast to make, but I'm also interested in making some goofy videos, possibly some tier lists and the like. So stay tuned. Thank you very much for watching. Bye.